With this part, I want to just try and share a little bit of the work, how we started, how it developed, what we're doing now, where we feel that God's leading us, and finish off with some specific projects that we're working towards, praying towards. Tonight, probably sort of go through that again a little bit, but with the visual, with the slides. But you know, if you feel any time that you don't quite understanding what I'm sort of trying to get across, or you got any questions, feel free to just to ask whenever you want to. It could be a good school class situation. Put your hand up, yeah, and we'll try and get this properly explained. First, I think I need to explain just a little bit about the situation in Spain. Now, first, Spain is what most people think of Spain. It's like what most people outside of Spain think of Australia. You have this sort of your touristic image, which is, but it's not all. Whereas most people think Australia's, you know, land full of kangaroos and whatnot, it's not all that there is to Australia. Same as that Spain is not just all bullfighting and Spanish dancing and et cetera, et cetera. But Spain is the biggest industry of Spain is tourism. There'd be in a year more, there'd be probably 50 million tourists who would go to Spain. But most of them would go to the touristic areas, which is sort of around the, like if you imagine that being Spain, being like the fist, Madrid in the middle. Most people would either go to Madrid or the Barcelona or around that this coast, which is the Mediterranean area. And of course, we're up here, which is out of that touristic route. Spain is used to be quite a, wouldn't say a poor country, but wasn't as economically doing well. That's why, again, many people used to come and spend their money in Spain because it was a cheaper country. But Spain has changed a lot in the last decade. The reasons for that change is that Spain, when you have to almost go back to the Second World War, when Europe was in war, but Spain didn't participate in that war. It had its own civil war, which was a very sad thing. And it was a fight between mainly between the communist ideal and what would you call it? Fascist ideal. The military won, and then Spain went into a dictatorship for almost 40 years under Franco. And just as a detail to remember, Franco actually was born and came from our town where we're working in Ferrol. And so during that time, there was no freedom really for anything. And then you would have to go back even way before that to think of the religious situation, where again there has been no freedom up until just recently. Just recently, Spain has now got democracy in about the last about 16 years or so, which has worked very well. It's been a very quick development, and it's actually Spain is a model now to many countries in Europe that have come out of communist regimes and trying to get into democracy. Spain has become very modern as it's entered into the European Common Market. Has had to compete, has had to upgrade all of its industries, and has become very modern almost overnight. I would even say that the economically is probably even doing better than perhaps even Australia, perhaps in a different way, but it's very going very well. So almost overnight, from one day to the next, from one year to the next, suddenly there's from a dictatorship we've gone to freedom, to democracy. Religious freedom. Spain has never had religious freedom. Never had religious freedom, right down for centuries, and then suddenly it has religious freedom. And whereas before it was quite struggling from the civil war and then the dictatorship, a poor country, has suddenly become very affluent. And so things have really, really changed. And some things haven't changed. This is the contradiction. Spain is still very, very cultural. Has a lot of culture behind it. If anyone knows a little bit about history, that Spain has had some major cultural influences. The Muslims, the Arabs, lived there for quite a long time and has influenced a lot of the culture, the architecture, and even the language. The Romans were there for quite some time, and the Catholic, and then the Catholic religion has been there for 15 centuries in full power and full control, religious-wise and political-wise. Now, if you know anything about the Reformation, you know what the Reformation is, what happened there? We're going back to the Middle Ages, where, you know, you had the Catholic Church, which was very corrupt, very, very off the track. And then the Bible was translated into German, then later into other languages, into common language for the first time, for a long time, and then printed and distributed. And people, common people, for the first time began to read the Bible and compare what the Bible was saying to what was going on in the religion, and see there was a big difference. So there was a breaking away. That's where the beginnings, you can almost trace most of the beginnings of what we would understand Christian churches, the different denominations, major denominations, have their roots back into that Reformation. Now, that never happened in Spain. That happened in almost every European country, which then spread out over the rest of the world, but it never happened in Spain. When that was going on, and when it just began in Spain, the Roman Catholic Church counteracted with the Counter-Reformation, and the main tool they used was the Inquisition. And so that was invented, it was homebred in Spain, it was applied, and then it was exported to try and counteract the Reformation that was going on in Europe. And that was a very cruel thing, where just to have a Bible, for instance, you'd be burnt. There was a lot of torturing, a lot of fear. It was a very cruel period of the church, and so Spain never experienced that change. The Roman Catholic Church, in its pagan form, was able to maintain its grip and its power, and it's kept on. And so, it's not that I'm anti-Catholic. Actually, I'm not, and you know, I try and not offend anyone who perhaps, you know, might be Catholic or come from Catholic backgrounds. It's just that the Catholic situation in Spain and in some other Catholic countries is very different from how it is perhaps here in Australia, where the Catholic Church has had to change and has had to compete. In Spain, it hasn't had to. And it still maintains the same form and tradition and culture and superstition as it did in many ways as back in the Middle Ages. And yet, you do see some changes, but not as many as you would like to see. Now, since we have religious freedom, there is, and even before, even during the times of where there wasn't religious freedom, there was a small evangelical church. Now, we would consider ourselves as Christians, but we would have to be nominated. We're not Catholic, we would be evangelical or Protestant, like as we would understand, like an assembly or, you know, Bible-believing, gospel-preaching church. That would be nominated in Spain as an evangelical or Protestant church. And there are very few Protestant or evangelical churches in Spain. Just to give you a figure, Spain has a population of 40 million. You compare that to Australia, which has, 17? And there would be about 8,000 towns and villages in Spain, and we're talking about large towns. The one we live in would be a population of, 150,000 people. And there's, you know, even a lot larger towns, but there's a lot of towns and cities and villages, 8,000. And only about 500 would have an evangelical church. So that means 7,500 towns. You could almost go all around Spain, and every place you're going to go through is not going to have any evangelical church. And the few evangelical churches that there are often very small. They're often 12, 15 people. And, you know, if you can get a church up to 30 people, then you're doing good. If you can get up to 50 or 60, then that's really good. If you get to 100, you've got a revival on your hands. So, I mean, it's very difficult to see the church grow, because you've hardly got any church to start off with, any evangelical church. You've got a very strong opposition, though it's not political now because we have religious freedom, to anything that's different. We would be considered as a minority, as a sect, as something that's not Christian by most, and there's a lot of fear. Even that goes back to, you know, what happened during the dictatorship and the civil war and back in the Inquisition, to anything that's, you know, different or it's got to do with the Bible or the gospel. And generally The Spanish person is very proud. Spain conquered the world almost at one time, and the Spanish person, I mean, you can't go there with an American background or an Australian background, American culture or Australian culture or an English culture, whatever, and think you've got something to teach or offer Spain. I mean, they'll see it the other way around. You know, they've got something to teach the rest of the world. They've got nothing to learn culture-wise from any other country or language-wise. And so, to come with another religion, again, there's a lot of opposition to that. And what makes it even more difficult is we have the same problem now as what we have in Australia. Whereas, you know, suddenly Spain is affluent, there's a lot of opportunities, a lot of money, and now everyone's after their car and their flat and their money. So even though people would be 99% of the people are Catholic, Roman Catholic, the practiced religion would probably have to be humanism or materialism, as it is here in Australia. Though many people say, well, how many people of those Catholics are practicing Catholics? Well, it's, quite a lot, but not as many as the Catholic Church would like. But there still is a very big influence, because it's not the same as, being here, you're practicing or not practicing by if you go or you don't go to church. There, if you're Spanish, you're Catholic. You're born Catholic. You're given a Catholic name, a saint's name. Like even to give the names that we gave our children, which are biblical names, in the beginning, that was only allowed because I'm a foreigner. You have to give them a saint's name. Then you have a saint's birthday. Then you have a godfather. They're born up with a Catholic education in the schools. Baptized, Christian as Catholic. They'll be confirmed at 12 or 13 years with, again, an education, Catholic education, Catholic. Every holiday, public holiday, would be a religious. It was a Catholic holiday. You'll be married Catholic, you'll be buried Catholic. I mean, it's something that's completely cultural. And so again, you come with, something else that's not Catholic, you're almost saying, well, you have to stop being Spanish to become Christian. And that's a difficult one to get over as well. So there are not many missionaries working in Spain before, because they weren't allowed. There wasn't freedom, and now because it's very difficult to see any results, many missionaries, the ones who do come, would work 2 or 3 years and not see any results and get discouraged and leave. I would say, like even in our particular situation, we've been there 12 years, and I would say for almost 8 of those years we hardly saw any definite fruit. And yet, it's because of God's knowing that that's where God wants you to be, that you stay and you keep on. And eventually God does provide the fruit, though it's not the sort of things that you'd like to see and that we have had seen, like for instance in South America or other countries. And yet there are a lot of people who are, believing that that's going to change. A lot of people are praying. Even a lot of people in South America are praying for revival in Spain. And there are indications. And I know that everything's in God's hands. But anyway, that's a little bit about the situation. Apart from that, I'd just like to add that it's a very nice place to live. People are very nice, the food's even better, and the way of living, which I could probably talk about later, I would much rather live that way with the culture and the way we have living than even here in Australia. I'm a boring person by nature, personality, I think, but it's hard to be boring in Spain. It's actually a very nice place to be. Just counterbalancing that to the difficulties there is to be trying to do Christian work. But anyway, when we started, in our town there are two assemblies. And again, perhaps another detail just to keep in mind is that in the area where we're working, it's like the state or the area is called Galicia. There are a few evangelical churches, and almost all of them are assemblies, which is quite unique. Also, they almost got the monopoly on the thing, and that started from an English Brethren movement about 100 years ago. Even when there wasn't freedom, they came and they really did something special, which kind of came to a standstill during the dictatorship, but it's still there. Now in our town, there are three evangelical churches, two are Brethren assemblies, and one is a Pentecostal church, or actually four, and then there's a Gypsy evangelical church as well. But it's still quite a large town, but like I said, about 150,000. And the Assemblies one is very small, ended up with about eight people, and the other one was quite large, but not reaching out at all. So we saw the need, as this lady was praying, to reach out. There's a big naval base there, with a lot of young people coming from all over Spain to do their military service, which is compulsory. And we saw that as a really good opportunity to get in contact with these young people who were sort of out of their home environment, sort of just walking around the streets many nights, to be able to, you know, get in contact with them with the gospel. And the problem was how? They're not going to come to the church, and the church wasn't definitely getting out. So we felt that we should set up a work to try and reach these young people. Now, that began with a coffee house, which we opened up in the, like, there's a red light area where all the bars and the prostitutes are, next to the big naval base. We got a little building there that we set up as a, what we call a coffee house. Now, you probably have heard of how coffee houses work. Well, ours was a little bit different in the sense that instead of just using it once or twice a week, like on the weekend, we actually set it up like a little, like a little cafeteria, because in Spain, in the culture, you drink a lot of coffee, and you know, you go, instead of just going to the local pub, you go to a, you know, one of hundreds of little, you know, coffee bars or coffee cafeterias that there might be on the street, and you have your drink of coffee or whatever there. So we set up like a little cafeteria, and instead of selling it, we of course gave the coffee free. We opened every night. We would open about 5 in the afternoon, and work through to 12 or 1 or 2, depending on the situation, because again, that's where most people are out on the street. And we would go out and invite people, the young people would come in for a free coffee, give the coffee, and sit down, talk, play table games, and just we'd spend all of our time doing what we call coffee evangelism. That's where I learned to drink coffee, learned to like coffee. And we spent years in that particular place doing just that. That's where I learned to drink the coffee, speak the language, learn about the culture, the people, and where we began to make the contacts. Saw some people come to the Lord, and saw a lot, met a lot, who didn't, but who were willing to spend time with us because they felt comfortable, they didn't feel threatened. And they saw that we're willing to listen to them and get to know them. But with that, we had a lot of opportunities to do a lot of sewing, a lot of talking, a lot of sharing. But we began to, over a period of time, begin to see that a lot of these people, especially young people, you know, they have a lot of problems. And it wasn't just enough to, you know, just share the gospel and leave it at that. I mean, there had to be more if we're going to see them, you know, come through and go on with the Lord, especially without not really having any other sort of Christian support things to help them on in their Christian growth. So two of the main problems which we came across, and I'll probably explain a little bit more about this tonight, was one, unemployment, which even though, you know, Spain is doing very well, there's still a lot of unemployment. It's about 20 to 27%. And the thing is, you don't get the dole. If you haven't worked at a proper contracted job for a year, and even then you only get it 6 months. So most unemployed people are not getting the dole, or they're not getting it regularly. And so most of the people, I would say at one time, almost 99% of the people that we, you know, that we had quite a good linking with, and who, some who converted and some who were interested in coming to the meetings, no one worked. No one had work. People were still either going and sort of begging or living off their families or whatever. And we saw that that was even detrimental in their Christian growth because, you know, just they weren't doing anything constructive with their life. You know, even if you passed a hat around for a collection, you get 5 cents, you'd be lucky. You know, and it wasn't good for them. The other problem was we're running into a lot of alcoholics, especially young people, a lot of alcohol-related problems. And then later on, a lot of drug-related problems. Now, when I talk about the drug problem in Spain, again, it's a different situation there than here. I'm not talking about the drug addict who sort of started off in school smoking marijuana and, you know, trying this and trying that, getting into the wrong friends and just sort of gradually ending up as a hippie or whatever, that's how I got into it. I'm talking about a person who's usually 20 years over, who has had his family, his career, his education, his money, everything. And then when Spain suddenly opened up and suddenly became modern, suddenly there was heroin. And he's tried heroin, not started off with the small stuff first, he's got many times straight into heroin and got addicted, and within a very short time has lost everything. Lost you know, his family, his money, his career, his everything. And the sad thing is that he's even lost his future, he's lost his health, because all of them have got AIDS. All of the heroin addicts, all of the drug addicts, which means that even if they get off drugs, they've only got about, if they look after themselves, about 5 years or 7 years to live. And we're talking about, in just a few years, like when we started working, we hardly met any drug addicts. And then just in a few years, I mean, I'd say now, within, say, 10 years, in a span of 10 years, there wouldn't be a single family in Spain that doesn't have someone directly or indirectly involved in heroin. We're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and all sorts of people. And so that again was one of the problems that we had to come to grips with, the unemployment and the drug and alcohol related problems. So not because we necessarily felt, now I think this is something important to understand also, not necessarily because we felt that God was calling us into that work. Many people think, well, the work that we're doing now is because that's what I, since I was involved in drugs, that was an automatically thing. I never wanted to actually work really with drug addicts. So they're all no hopes like I was. And it wasn't something I looked at. And yet, as you start working, God starts giving you people, and then you have to start meeting the needs, as you try and reach them, of those people. And so we kind of got through the circumstances again that God puts us in. You know, brought us to places where we had to say, well, what are we going to do with all these unemployed, with all these drug addicts, with all these alcoholics, to be able to help them continue not only to hear the gospel, but to go on, come to the point of responding and then going on with the Lord. I think you can almost apply there, you know, where James says, you know, it's no use just saying, you know, to the person that hasn't got clothing, hasn't got a coat or hasn't got food, well, God bless you, you know, be dressed and be warm and be fed. I mean, if you have contact with them, if you're trying to reach them, and especially even if they are some way interested or have responded, what are you going to do about that coat they haven't got and that food that maybe they haven't got? So eventually I decided to, since I did know something about woodwork, we made an appeal, actually you probably remember it, to the people back in Australia to send us calendar pictures. And quite a lot came through to us, and we started using those calendar pictures to teach them in the coffee house to make like manual crafts, to make you know, handcrafts, pictures and different things where they could start learning to work. And then we encouraged them to take the stuff that they're making and go to the doors and sell it, or go to the markets and sell it, and start earning them some money for themselves. And that started catching on. I had a lot of problems, of course, like anything in the beginning, to work out the best way of doing it. But we found that was working, that was helping. And so we had to shift premises, and we got a building where we set up a workshop in the bottom floor, and in the top floor we had people living in who didn't have at that particular time, because of their problems, a place to stay. And we developed more over the years. It took about 3 years, I think, in all to fully develop the concept of the workshop schools. But we saw that it was being positive, because it was getting people off the street. It was teaching them to do something positive in a situation where they weren't really getting any help or doing anything or any hope of ever doing anything. And it was able to get some of them, you know, on their feet and going for themselves. But over a period of time, more importantly than that, we saw that in the long run it was also helping them in their spiritual growth, in their spiritual response. And I'm going to explain a little bit more about that later as well, because it's become actually a very important part of the work. At that time we got in contact with, we actually had I can remember the first heroin addict that we ran into. He came along to the coffee shop one day, a fellow called Manolo, and he basically said, look, you know, I'm a heroin addict, I'm a drug addict, can you help me, can you get me off drugs? What do you do? We didn't have any drug centers or there was nothing. So we took him into our home and we tried to help him. That didn't work. That was a complete failure. You just basically got to be with him 24 hours a day and go into the toilet with him. Otherwise, they're just going to always, you know, find ways of getting that drug again. It's very, very addictive, the heroin. And we tried so many different ways, and eventually I heard of a Christian group that was beginning a centre. They were beginning some drug rehabilitation centres. So we scraped together the money that we had, and I took him to the centre, thinking that I was going to, actually I had to make a quite long journey to get him there, and I thought that we would have to pay also to have him in that centre, because usually in the government-run centres that were just beginning, you have to pay quite a lot of money to have them in the centres. So to my surprise, when we got there, to find not only a Christian drug rehabilitation centre that was working very well, but they accepted him and they really helped him, you know, tremendously. But when I left to come back home, you know, this drug rehabilitation centre even gave me a gift. That, you know, just blew my mind out. And then later on, we kept in contact with them. We kept sending people, and they came and started, you know, working with us. And they wanted us to join them, but we decided not. We decided to keep independent, but to sort of work alongside with them. But they have been just such a blessing to us and to so many people. Just for us, just to see how they're working. I'll just tell you a little bit about what God is doing through this group. They're called Reto. I think names is not important. Perhaps most people in Spain don't even really, even in the Christian circles, might not even know what they're doing. But to me, or to us, they're doing more than what most missionaries are doing in 100 years, you know, in Spain. And God is really doing something very special amongst these drug addicts. And you've probably heard of Mike and Lindsay McKenzie. Now, they're working with another group that's doing a very similar work. And there's about three major Christian groups working amongst the heroin addicts in Spain, and God is doing, it's almost like a revival. God is doing something very, very special amongst this particular group. This group that we work with, just in 8 years, they've been able to set up more than 60 or 70 centres in Spain. They would have at a time more than 3,000 or 4,000 young people in those centres. They're all run by ex-drug addicts, there's no professionals, and they're all self-financed, self-supported, no government funding. And they're all, especially the ones who are running with the show, they're all on fire Christians. And just keep in mind the fact that they've only got 5 years left to live. And they come there, they get off drugs, they come to know the Lord, and then they give those 5 years or 7 years that they got to just to reach out again to other drug addicts, set up more centres. And not only that, but they're reaching out into all of Europe. They're sending teams off into Russia, into Romania, into France, into Italy. And they're just turning Spain and Europe upside down. And this is drug addicts, ex-drug addicts, who really haven't got anything going for them society-wise, who've lost everything, and yet God is using them in such a special way. Now, it was them that taught us some very important lessons on how to work with the sort of people that we're working with. I'd just like to share perhaps one of the guiding principles that they taught us that we began applying to the work and has really made a big difference in the work. And it might sound a bit harsh or a bit cruel to you, actually, as how most social work or help is done here in Australia, secularly, and perhaps even in Christian context. But, maybe later on someone's got some problems with this, so I can talk more about it and explain more the reasons behind it. But we found that to be able to help someone properly, long term, that person has to want to be helped. Has to want to be helped. Now, we many times think that as Christians we have to give whenever someone asks us. Now, I think we have to be willing to give, but we also have to be wise in how we give. We have found that as we're invested in people trying to help them and work with them, that if there is not a commitment or a willingness from the beginning to want to change from their part, to want to become accept responsibility from their part, and to learn and submit themselves to something, whether it be a learning situation or some sort of discipline, then not only are they never going to change, but they're going to make it impossible for you, because they're always going to put the thing back on you, that you have to give, you have to give more, you have to give more, you have to give more, you have to be the one who does the pushing, you have to be the one who does the changing. They're never going to budge. And you might be able to do that one person or two or three, and then you get wiped out, and you're not going to be able to help anyone else, and they're never going to change 8 years down the line. And we found that working with people, we've right from the beginning put it very clear to them that they have to be willing to work. They have to be willing to submit themselves to some sort of discipline. They have to be willing to change. Otherwise, we don't even begin to help them. We just say, well, that's the way you choose to live, and I'm not going to support that. I want to see you, you know, to go on and to be a better person. So with the workshop schools, we're in a situation now that if people come, and now many people are coming who want help, but we say, well, if you're going to be helped, then you have to come and work. And this is in the context, remembering that most of them aren't working, they're not getting a dole. But we have a situation now where we can actually teach them how to work. We have the workshop schools, we have about 30, 40 people who are going through the courses at a time. We can teach them different trades, different work skills, carpentry, furniture making, furniture restoration, repairing fridges, stoves, painting, decorating, whatever. Whatever we can find someone to teach, we teach it. And so we put them in a situation, we put them on a 2-week trial period where they have to prove to us that they're going to be punctual, and that they're going to make the effort, and that they're going to, and that they have to prove to us that they're willing to learn, that they want to learn, they want to change. Then we'll put them in a 3-month course, and if they're doing well, then they can continue. And we want to see them, and we try and teach them in a very short time how to be able to work for themselves, so that soon they can start getting money for themselves and start looking after themselves and become responsible for their own problems. Now, if they've got a drug or an alcoholic problem, then their first step needs to have to go to a centre, recognise they've got a problem and want to get cured of it. And so we'll even help them get to a centre, but they have to be the ones who want to do it. If they don't want to, then we don't do any more with them until they're willing to make that step. Now, we found in the long run that two things has opened up a lot of doors to being able to share the gospel with the people who come. We find that as we're able to help them, then as we work with them, then as we share our faith with them and invite them to different activities, then they're very open. There's not those barriers. You know, most people wouldn't know me as a missionary. They don't know I'm a missionary. I'm the carpenter or the one who runs the workshops or the centres, and so there's not those barriers. We're the people who've been able to help them, and so they're willing to listen to what we've got to say about spiritual things. We find it also opens up a lot of doors into their families. When we see that the men's willing to work, then we get involved, if they want to, with their families. We then help with food or second-hand clothing or second-hand furniture where there might be a need, if the man is working, is willing to work. We try and get them, the ones who are showing some sort of interest, involved then in Bible studies, discipleship courses, coming to meetings. We have our evangelistic meeting run in the workshop itself on the Sunday evenings, which many times, 80% of the people who come are non-Christian, and yet they come, because we have that contact and relationship with them, and then we seek to, in a formal way, continue to share the gospel. And eventually, some will come through and get converted, and then come into the assembly that we're working with. Come and get baptized. Now, all those things, getting baptized, getting into the local assembly, identifying themselves openly with the Protestants, that's very difficult for a Spaniard to do. And it often takes a long time before that, of friendship, of building up that confidence, being able to help them for a conversion or an understanding of the gospel, then a conversion, and then a continuing to help in discipling. And most of the evangelism and discipling that we're doing is done outside of the church. And the final goal is, of course, to get them eventually involved in the local assembly. The other thing that, as I said, it's helped us to, the workshop situation has helped us, is to weed out the ones who are worth investing in from the ones who are not, right from the beginning. As I said, if someone's not willing to begin to put their part on the, in helping themselves, If they're not willing to work, if they're not willing to change, if they're not willing to discipline themselves or submit themselves or to listen to someone else, you know, they're never going to submit themselves to God's word, to submit themselves to God, to learn, to change spiritually. I mean, there can always be an exception, but generally they're not going to. And so, you know, we find right from the beginning that, you know, making it a little bit hard for the people, in the long run, we find that, you know, these are the ones who are responding, definitely in the centres, in the drug rehabilitation centres. You know, they get to a centre, they have to make that effort to get themselves. It's free, but they have to go. They have to want to get off drugs. Then they have to work when they're there. And they have to submit themselves to, you know, all the rules that there are. And yet they're the ones who are responding to the gospel. And they really, then they give the rest of their life to the Lord. So that's more or less our main, at the moment, evangelistic outreach. It's done, you know, in the work, in the context of the workshops and the social work. We actually had to set up an association to make it legal of the sort of work that we're doing, and also to fund it, the workshops and materials and the you know, tools and all the expenses that there was. There was one time we were trying to pay about three rents out of our own pocket. Now, as Manoli said, we live by faith. And ever since I got converted, and Manoli as well, we've always felt that if God wants us to be in Christian work, then He's the one who's going to provide for us. We let Him know our needs, and He'll provide us. We've made it a policy never to ask for money. And God has always provided, but there have come times when it's been difficult. One of those times was when we were beginning with the workshops. We had about three rents to pay and all the materials, and yet God provided. And we actually, once I went to one of the workshop, one of the drug rehabilitation centres, and when I finished there, they took me outside and they showed me a van. They gave me the keys and they said, "It's all yours." And this is drug addicts, you know. They gave us a van, a very nice one, which they felt that God wanted them to give to us, and it was just at the right time. Because we've been at that time applying this principle to the people. You know, if you want to be helped, you've got to work. So God did the same thing to us. He says, if you want money, then you work for it. So we used the van to set up a second-hand furniture business, which we then run around and we collect everything that people throw out, furniture, fridges, clothing, whatever. And then we put it back into the workshop schools, recycle it, teach the different skills of how to restore and how to repair, etc. Then we put it back and sell it. And that is coming out to be able to self-finance the work, you know, the workshops and the people who are working there. Though we ourselves and the other Christian workers who are working with us, we still live by faith. We don't touch that money. But at least it's been a real blessing to be able to see the work itself get to a point where it's actually financing itself through the use of the second-hand furniture. So, yeah. That's another long story. yes and no. When they come, we tell them very bluntly that we're not going to pay them a cent, and that they're going to have to work their guts out and work for their own money. But we do, depending on how each person goes, we do seek to help them. There are different ways that they can be paid. See, what we don't want them to just be coming because we're going to be paying them. We don't have the money for that anyway. We want them to be working for themselves. So the first aim is to teach them how to make things so that they can start working for themselves and earning money themselves. And most of them can get to that point. Then some of them who are doing better, especially the ones who respond spiritually or get converted, since there's no jobs really that they can sort of get into, we have to create jobs or help them create jobs for themselves. So we often get a lot of work that comes to the workshop for us to do, so we then pass those jobs on to the ones who are doing better for them to do, get the money, and they pay then a small percentage back to the workshop. So they're getting money indirectly through us. Some of them they can make things, they can go on and they can make things and then sell them, put them to sell in the exhibition where we're selling the furniture, and then they get the money, the workshop again gets a percentage from that. And others we try and get established in their own small business where, again, they can be working for themselves, but they often need a help to get started. They'd be the ones who we see that are worthwhile, who are doing well. Some are coming from now. We actually have the council the local council sending us married men who have to support families who don't have work and who are not getting the dole. Instead of paying them the dole, they send them to us for us to teach the different work skills, and they pay them the council pays them a small wage. And they're sending us as many men as we're willing to take. They don't even come to see what we're doing. Never been to see what we're doing or what we're saying. They just we can take as many men as we're willing to take. They pay them a small wage, and we teach them whatever we want to teach them. I mean, God's really opened up a tremendous door there. So that's actually brought us now to the point, and I'll finish with this, where we need to expand. We actually have two projects that are on the, say, prayer board, to open up another or two more workshops. Not just for opening up workshops. The problem for most missionaries when they go to Spain to do church planning is, how do you make your first contact? You see, the usual thing is you go, like what Manoli was doing, and you have to go around the towns and villages where there's nothing. You have to go door to door, give out the tracts, you know, have open airs, whatever, and try and make those first contacts, which are really hard. And then, you know, hope that God will give you someone who, you know, eventually get converted, and then you try and get someone else, and you try and start meetings, and you try and it can take years, you know, and some people after years don't even really see anything started. And we found that, you know, we have a situation now getting involved, you know, in the social sort of aid, social help, you know, with the workshops and with the centres, etc., where we can go to a town and we can actually present the project to the council, even apply for a building, perhaps, not necessarily, but at least, you know, get set up as a workshop, get the people coming who will come on their own accord, or the council will send them, where then we had the contacts right from the beginning with them and with their families. We're able to work with them, help them, able to have a situation that's not threatening for them. We're able to share our faith with them, to be able to get them to start studying the Bible and coming to informal meetings. And in a very short time, we have a situation where we have, you know, a lot of contacts, a lot of open doors, a lot of people who are interested in coming to some sort of Bible, you know, teaching exposure, which, when God works and convicts and converts, a work on New Assembly can start from that. So that's the strategy that we want to continue using now in other towns. We have one place now that we, God willing, will probably open in early the year, January, February, which will actually be run by people who have come up through the work or converted, who are doing well, and they're willing to continue on and help open up the new place. And the other one, which I'll be showing later this evening, is if we can get some more workers, some more helpers, even from Australia, to open up we've been offered an old abandoned railway station, the whole property, for a very cheap rent, where again we can open up another centre and use the same strategy, but it's a very nice property and it'll make a very good place for developing into a campsite, which is what we also do in the summer. We do camping. So in the next, I'll say the next 5 years, we'd like to be able to open, and next year at least two, maybe three, more workshops. We have two of the places already lined up, and the other one is just a matter of looking for it. And we'd like to see in the next, 5 years, at least one, and if God bless us, can be more, but at least one new, say, church begun in a place. The place we're thinking at the moment is an area called Jubia. Now, for that, we need more workers. We're challenging the assemblies as we're moving around. I have a printed material there that anyone can take a copy on, people coming short term. Now, as I said before, we're not finding people really interested much in long term work, but we're encouraging people to get involved at least in short term. And to come short term to Spain, even for just 6 months, is not such a big deal. It's not too expensive. It costs us less this time to make our trip as a family of five than it did 5 years ago. There's a lot of competition to go to London in the airlines, especially the Asian airlines, and it's not that expensive. And then just sort of jump over to Spain, either by train or car or plane. You can get a 3-month tourist visa, no problem, which you can extend for another 3 months, and perhaps you could do that several times more. But we're encouraging people to consider even coming just for 6 months. to help in a practical way, knowing that they won't come with the language, but anybody can learn to drive on the other side of the road and drive a van. Pick up furniture, which we're doing all the time, carting up and down the stairs, which again exposes you to the Spanish people, where they're living and who they are. Work in the workshops with the people we have there. Help in a practical way with the new buildings that we're continually working on, which are always very old, need a lot of work. And even just helping in, you know, perhaps your interpretation in the beginning, you know, with testimonies and the singing, etc., and the meetings that we have. So there's quite a good situation for practical help for a short-term period, which helps us and frees us long-term workers to be able to get more involved in the other aspects of the work, and also gives them a good exposure to those who come to what it's like working, doing mission work in modern Europe these days, which is not living in a jungle, not going to India, not having to sleep on the ground. It's very different. And then perhaps God would, you know, if someone has got in mind for someone longer term, just to give that person that vision or that burden. But I think even if someone just came for a short-term experience, which I understand some of you have done in other places, that's positive, because it opens your vision. That gives you a better understanding how to pray for missionaries and for mission work, something that you have then to come back and share to your assembly and to other assemblies, and that helps enlarge the vision of everyone. So I'll probably share a little bit more about that tonight with the slides. We also have, I mean, there are some financial projects which, if anyone would be interested in knowing, I can give you a bit more information about that for the work in obtaining a van. Every place we open up, we need at least one van to be able to get the second-hand furniture business going so they can become self-financed, etc., etc. But to me, the most important thing at the moment is to see some people coming. We're really asking God for that. And I'm just going to ask Manoli to come and also share a little bit about the woman's side of the work, and sort of talk more about the men and what she's also involved in the work there.
You know, I think when the Lord gave us the great commission, you know, to go into all the world and preach the gospel, He gave that to everyone, you know, men and women. And I think many times women, and I mean, you know, if you go around the world and look at the missionary scene, you would find that 3/4 of those reaching out to the lost are women. Many times single women, you know, doing an impossible job. And I think, you know, many times when as married women, we think that's it, you know. I have my children, my home, I support my husband, and that's all I have to do, you know. And I think as women, we are also part of the Great Commission, you know. We need to be reaching out to the lost. Maybe we don't need to go to India or to Spain or to South America, but even here in Australia, you know, there is the Great Commission that needs to be taken into action and in reaching out to the lost. And I think, you know, we can always be reaching out, and I mean, women are best reached by women, you know. And I want to encourage everyone here, you know, especially the women, to ask God, you know, what He wants, which way He wants you to be involved, you know. Maybe it's in the kitchen, maybe, but maybe not, you know. And I think it all depends what God has for us. And I think we are all the same before God. We are all important, but He's got a specific job for each one each of us to do. And I like to share a few things that, you know, mainly that I like to be doing. And when we go back, for the past 2 years, I have not been able to do much because I had 2 little ones. And you know how it is. I mean, you are very limited in what you can do. I was also very tired. But when we go back, and for a few years, God has been showing me and confirmed this, you know, as we came to Australia, that I should start using the KYB studies in Spain. Are you familiar with this? Or yes. And you know, so I had done a little bit of that. I translated two of the books and we were using them, but I've never joined in any formal way. And actually the CWCI are quite formal, aren't they? I mean, in all the different... So I was a bit afraid to kind of join them fully. But God has confirmed that, you know, and I have done it. And so when... because you have to do that to be able to use the books, the KYB studies. Some of the books have already been translated. They're using them in Chile, in South America. But they've never been used in Spain. So... probably have to work on some of them to, because even though the language is still the same, there are some differences. And so I'll want to start that, and it won't be difficult. It's very easy actually to get any women's thing started. Women are always wanting to get into things, you know, because there's not much going for them, you know, and it's not hard to do that. But I want to do that because, you know, when you get them to study the Bible, there's a lot of fear. Coming from a Catholic background, women are... this fear is into them. You know, they don't think they... I mean, they have this picture of God who is going to punish them if they do... if they just get out of line. That's the image they got of God. So there's a lot of fear and spiritual oppression. You know, and the Bible says... you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And so I think, you know, for women, I think for everyone, but talking about women especially, we need to do that, you know, to get them to study the Bible for themselves. And that's why I think these KYB studies are so good, because they have an individual study that each one has to do before coming to the meeting. And actually they are not allowed to share until they've done the homework. So I think that's very good, because it's not just hearing what the Bible says from someone else, but it's actually confronting them with the Word of God individually, you know. And we have seen how good it's been, and actually one of the best ministries in Spain to reach out to people is the Bible Correspondence Course. It's a long work in a way. I mean, it's not, you don't see decisions just from one day to the next. Maybe it will take months or even years of someone doing the correspondence studies or several books for them to come to make a decision, but then they know what the Bible says, you know, and it's a work we have seen used of God. Now, that's one thing. And as far as what I'm going to do when I go back, I like to be more involved in the work, and I think it will be more possible now, because like our three-year-old, Ana Esther, will be going to preschool. That's when you start in Spain. She'll actually be four in February, so I'll have more time. And Trevor wants me to be involved in the workshop. I mean, mainly to do with representing the work with the authorities and even the press, the publicity. See, I didn't want to get involved in this before because I just didn't have the energy or the time, you know, to do it. But as we go back, I like to get more involved and help in any way I can in that area. And I also started studying about 2 years ago. I just did 1 year back in university in our hometown, and I started working on a degree on industrial law, which is not the thing I would ever choose to do, but it is good for the work, you know, and it kind of helps you to learn about the setup, legal setup of how things work, and how to deal with the government, with the local authorities, and so I want to continue that, and I still have 2 more years to do. And you can pray for that if you remember, because it's not easy with all the other things. We would also like to apply for grants, because we believe that we are entitled to some help, you know, like you've been helped here through with the school. We are being accepted by the local council and actually appreciated, and they are telling us that we should be getting into this. Well, we don't know anything about it ourselves, but we would like to get some information and to, you know, to work on that, and that there needs to be work done on that. Now, another thing that we would also like to do, and we've been for quite a few months trying to see how we can go about it, is what to do with all the clothes that we have been given. See, we can only use a few, like for needy people. And we have a lot of good clothing given to us. And actually, for even a few months, we have been refusing to take more because we don't even have the space, you know, to keep it. So we've been trying to find out about needs in different countries like India and South America. And there are a few places where they won't use clothing. They need it. And we probably do that. But we like to set up ways where we can sell it. You know, like you have here, second-hand shops, clothing. And so we would like to do that with the building we have. And then these other two buildings that we are thinking of opening up, we like to kind of do the clothing and set it out nicely so people would buy it. And with that money, we like to actually use it to mainly to be sent to needy countries like, well, other countries, not just to Spain, but to India mainly, and even some to South America, but mainly to India. And I would like to for the women to be more involved in doing this and helping. I think, you know, we have the studies for them, and we have seen actually quite a few, especially of the mothers, coming to make a decision and to, you know, to join the fellowship. And we like them not just to do this, but to also be doing something that they are serving others, you know, because I think when we give, we are doing something for others. God is blessing us and we are growing in our faith. And we like to teach our people to give in any way they can. And I think this is a very good way for them to get involved with the clothes. And we haven't done anything on that, but we could even be taking them to markets, the local markets, and you know, just to see how else we can do. And there's another thing that we like to do, and there is this other missionary couple working with us, Paul and Margaret Rollins. And Margaret is very keen on starting a craft morning or a craft day, and we have never done anything like this, and this will be aiming to reach out to women mainly. See, that we have some, about five last year, who joined the course, the workshop course, you know, five women. But we have other women that, especially old ones, you know, who have time in their hands and who would like to be doing something like this. So that's another project, thinking of women that you can pray for, Margaret, and how we are going to do it, when, for how long, you know, and so... And that's all. I don't know if you have any questions or anything. But if you have any ideas or ways that we could go about these things, because I've seen here in Australia that there's a lot of craft work being done, I mean, in connection with reaching out to people. Yeah. You mean us or generally or... See, we have Child Evangelism Fellowship working in Spain, and they are doing a very good work. We don't have them in our area, but like we get in contact with them when we go to a conference. They would be doing the children's work, you know, for all the children, and they do an excellent job. And then, you know, you have the Sunday school work, mainly to reach out to the children, I guess, of Christian parents. We have a small Sunday school in on Sundays when the meeting is in the evening. When the meeting is on, you know, there is a Sunday school for children. And it's a difficult thing, actually, because the parents are a bit suspicious, you know. I mean, children are very important in Spain. So if you want to reach out to the children, you need to have the parents first, I think. Unless they are just children that the parents don't care much about, you know, they are happy to get rid of them. But you would find, I mean, I've been actually quite shocked here in Australia to see, you know, the needs that there are with children. Because I think in Spain, people generally care more for their children, are more protected of them. You know, and I mean, sometimes they, like if you would like to have, like, say, a good news club, you would need to tell the parents what you are doing and kind of convince them, even invite them to come along, you know. Otherwise, they'll be very suspicious of that. We don't even think about it. I mean, we know you know, what you need to do to protect yourself, you know, we would deal with them and treat them like everyone else, you know. And actually these people in the centers, they don't even think of it. I mean, they live their life to the full, you know, and many times there will be someone dying. I mean, and then everyone in that particular house would have to take turns, sometimes taking care of the children. Like when we visited them the last time before we came, in one of the centers, there was a mother that was dying, and she had, I think, two children. Well, the whole kind of family in the house, different couples, they would all take turns to help with the children and do all the work that they were to do, so the husband could be with her, I think, through the night, and then someone could be there through the day with her, you know, and then others would help with the children and the housework and everything, so they would keep life going. But you don't find them that they are thinking of death that much, you know. I think we think more than they do, you know, of what life is going to be for them, and they just live life to the full. And I mean, to us, they are really an inspiration, you know. I go there sometimes, like Trevor goes every week or every 2 weeks to give teaching to the center, and I just go there to get encouraged, you know, to see them singing and, you know, how they listen. It's amazing. You've never seen anything like that, you know. I mean, mainly men, they have mainly men in these centers, and they would just sit there for hours. I remember once Trevor went and took a missionary friend with him who was visiting us from Madrid, and Trevor shared, I think it was from Romans, wasn't it? Or yeah, and when he sat down, they knew this other one was a missionary, and they said, "Brother, have you got anything for us?" And he stood up and went for another hour. That was 2 hours. When he sat down, he said, "Trevor, can you go on?" You know? And they must have gone, I mean, they had a bit of singing in between, but not much, you know, for about 4 hours, and they were still wanting more, because they really take it all in. I mean, we've never seen anything like it anywhere else. So you go there and you just get encouraged, you know, seeing these young people, how hungry they are, you know, for the Word of God. And they work hard, you know. And even the places that they have, we have been in contact with them now for about 6 years, I think. You see them improved, you know. I mean, you go to the place, and maybe they started very simply using everything that was given to them, like odd tiles, different colors and everything. But as they go on, they will try to improve, you know. And so they're always active in every way, you know. They look good, presentable, you know. They don't give you the impression that life is kind of, you're just waiting to die, you know. They are really very much full of life and not stopping, you know. If they can go and help in some center, they are very happy. They think, "Oh, I've been given this to do," you know, and they are most happy to be able to do anything, you know, to help others. Even, I know one of the jobs they have is to wash the sheets, you know, of the bed. I think that's one of the jobs that's one of the first jobs that they are given if they are proven kind of mature or responsible, and they are really happy to get that, you know. And I'm talking about men that maybe have had a their own business before, but you know, they got into drugs, and so they are really an encouragement, you know, to see. Did you want to ask anything else?
Yes.
I guess this is all over the world, and women are doing much more, you know, in Spain. They're taking a much more, I guess, of a public role. You know, there are a lot of women now involved in politics, you know. Before, it wasn't just a thing. I mean, you only saw the men. I don't think that women are so independent like they are here, you know, wanting to kind of do things on their own. You will see them more, I mean, if they are married, they would stay at home, or they would have a job, but wouldn't want to get that involved. Yeah, I think there is not that even though they're more involved, I guess, in, you know, a lot of women would work because, you know, they want to have a good life, and especially with the younger couples, a lot of women would work, would have a job outside the home. I think there is a problem too, mainly with older women, with a very low self-image. You know, women think that they cannot do much. So I find many times that I need to encourage them to kind of do things, you know, try to do things, to see that they have a potential, you know, given by God that they can work on. And I think most women would think that they cannot try new things, or, you know, they're not capable. That's what... this is not so with the younger generation, you know, but with the older one. Well, you see, the thing is, it could have been through the needle, you know, but a lot of girls who are drug addicts would get into prostitution. I think most of them would. And, you know, also when they are married or having relations, I mean, sex, you know, with men that have it, I mean, they just get it. And they're not really careful when, you know, when they're living out in the street and into drugs. And sometimes, like we've seen couples, you know, and the husband maybe had AIDS and the wife caught it from him, and the wife would get AIDS, you know, I guess full fledged or whatever, and the husband would have it for years, and it can be dormant or, you know, there but not really. It's different with different people. I mean, we know a little bit from the, you know, from what we have seen. But I guess it's something that they are studying all the time. I know the last thing they were doing in the centers was trying to get some of this alternative medicine, you know, with herbs, and trying to kind of boost the self-defense, the immune system, that's right, you know. They were trying that, and that was helping. They would try anything that is kind of going. But at the same time, you, like I said, you don't see them dwelling on this. You know, they don't even think of it.
Yes.
See, our children are going, I mean, at the moment Joel, but Anastair will join this year when we go back, the public school, the local school, and to us it really shows how God is faithful, you know, because when we moved into this area of town, it was very close to the red light district, and everyone was horrified, you know, how are you going to take your family to live there, you know, and yet we knew that God wanted us to go there, and Joel wasn't going to school then, so we didn't know anything about the school. And as we found out, the school was just around the corner from us. It takes him 2 minutes to get to school, walking, you know. And it's actually one of the best schools, I mean, they are telling us, all parents are bringing their children from, you know, maybe half an hour away, so they are able to go to this particular school. It seems that they're trying different things. It's not a very big school. It's like about 120, 140 students. And they are trying to have the school from the classes from 9 to 2. The children come home, have lunch, and that's it for the rest of the day. Then they can get in other activities that are not compulsory, but depending on what the child's interest is, you know, they would join. And they can go to things like swimming, sports, instrument playing, you know, things like that. And it's a very good school. I mean, we were very impressed with the way things have been done, you know, different things. The children like going there. They kind of have, through the year, different festivities, you know, that they celebrate, like the Day of Peace, and they have things to do with that and other things. And we had a parents' meeting, or the parents had to kind of vote to keep the hours of the school, because that's unusual. In Spain, they go from 9 to 1 or 1:30, and then from 3:30 to 5:30. So they are the whole day. They come home for lunch, but then they need to go back. Well, this school was very unusual in this. So all the parents had to vote, and I think they had to get 3/4 of the parents voting yes, you know. And I think of the whole school, only about 4 parents didn't vote. And most of them were positive, you know. So
maybe you could say also that there are Catholic schools and there's public schools. Public schools are actually even better. I mean, the Catholic schools are very good. Public schools are even better in Spain. The standard of education is very high. In the terms of religion, I mean, now they've brought in that, even before in the public schools they would teach the Catholic religion, but now they have an alternative. They can either learn ethics or the Catholic religion, our children learn ethics. And they're trying to bring in now it's almost working, where even the evangelical religion can be taught at the school, though it's still a little bit tricky.
If you provide the teacher.
Yeah. But it's a very good, actually, education system. Very high standard, too. Any Christian schools, like evangelical? We were just talking about the other day, actually. As far as we know, there's only one in all of Spain. Up here in Madrid. There might be another one, but we only know of one. Actually, I was just thinking, everyone's got the vision for starting one in Spain, but it would be very good.
There's another.
Very fun? Yes, well, like the main ones of us who are running with it, we're actually missionaries. Though we have others who, so we put an emphasis right on the beginning that, like what Manoli was saying, we try and teach them right from the beginning that, you know, it's better to give than to receive. So even though they come there to receive their courses, we actually try and get them to, like, they have to help run, even if they come for the course, they have to help run the place. As soon as they've learned something, they have to teach that to someone else. When someone gets converted, we have, you know, some who are working there now who are actually teaching and helping others who, you know, have got converted. But generally, if someone takes on some sort of responsibility, they have to be a Christian, be converted. But everyone gets involved in helping in one way or the other with the running of the place.
See, the association is set up like a legal association, and there is about 5 people, isn't it, who have a position of secretary, vice president, president, you know, I guess like you have here in Australia. And then we have a bigger committee with almost about 2 people from each of the churches that are there, you know. We find that this is good for them to know what is happening and to communicate to their particular church, you know. So we would meet two or three times a year with this committee, and they would also bring in ideas. You know, we have some discussion on things, projects, and things like that. I think the prices are about the same, actually. Yeah. See, housing is about the same, but you get more for your money.
Everything's smaller.
You just get a flat.
The cars are smaller. The flats are smaller. Food would be about the same. Clothing, probably more. So you'd have to spend a lot more in clothing, actually. People are very very well dressed. Put a lot of importance on being very well dressed. I remember one drug addict I picked up once from his home to take to a centre, and he was, you know, at the bottom end of the line. I mean, really, really bad. And I had to wait there about an hour and a half for him to get his stuff ready. He was packing up his bag to go to the centre. And what he was doing was he was trying to find clothes that were properly ironed, that didn't have any, you know, properly washed, you know, didn't smell of tobacco smoke or whatever. I mean, they really, even if they're a complete drug addict, they're very dressed very well.
Mm.
Very, very, give a lot of importance to the clothing. The standard, I mean, the cost of living would be about the same. The wages would probably be a little bit lower. The exchange rate is, that varies. It's gone down a lot. When we first went there, we'd get for a dollar, we'd get about, from Australia, we'd get about 120 pesetas. And then one time it went down, for every dollar, we'd get about 60 pesetas. And that's gone up now to about between 70 and 80. So whereas the Spanish pesetas stayed very strong, the Australian dollar has gone down.
We actually, a few years ago, tried to buy our own home, you know, and because the rent was so high that we just felt we didn't want to pay the money, and that was it. And actually we got a place, a very cheap place, that was very old, over 230 years old, thick walls, stone walls, and, you know, a lot of things needed to be done to the place, so Trevor did most of it, and then we got help from other people, you know, just doing it as volunteers. And we paid as much that we would have had to pay for just a cheap rent, you know, to pay the bank loan. And we're still in the same place. And actually it's got even a backyard, which is very unusual. The house is not very big, but it's got quite a big backyard. And we live on a flat on the first floor, and to go to the yard you have to go up the steps to the level of the second flat. So it's very unusual setup, but we are very happy to have like a patio, you know, and a bit of a yard. And what we've done in the backyard, there was a big shed. Half of it we've turned into a little apartment, so people that come to visit us can be there, live with us, but be a bit independent. And it really worked quite well. So, you know, when I was telling you, when we moved into this area, people felt really sorry for us. And, you know, the area started developing when we moved. I mean, there were a lot of houses just in ruins. Then they started pulling down everything and building all these new places. So we are now an old house surrounded by almost, you know, and quite a residential area now. And in 6 years, I think, since we have come to live there, it's just changed, you know, the place so much.